Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena, and joining us now is Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, best day of the week when we get to chat with you. Kevin Byard was on with Buzz and...
Same here. And the draft is in town. This is the most nervous I think I've ever been joining you guys, because I think Willie's going to quiz me on like who the third and fourth draft pick will be in order tonight.
Yeah, who do you prefer, Matthew Wood or Nate Danielson? Go.
Willie, I prefer whoever you prefer, okay? I can play this game. As long as you describe the players, I can tell you who I like based on the description. But I'll play I would be a good number two tonight, not a number one analyst.
Hutton told me earlier today, his hot take of the day is that Connor Bedard is going to fall to the Predators at 15.
Oh, that would be scoop. Tell Elliot Friedman that you've got that.
The guy's got more than one broken leg, if that's true.
Hutton, always appreciate chatting with you. Kevin Byard was on with Bussin' with the Boys yesterday and kind of gave his perspective of how everything happened, how he felt when they asked for a pay cut, just his perspective of the entire situation. Do you think that Rand Carthon made a mistake in asking Kevin Byard to take a pay cut?
Yeah. Not in asking him, just the way it all went down, I do. Because it played out in the media for a couple of weeks before Carthon spoke on it at the NFL owners meetings out in Arizona. And then, you know, perception is reality at that point. So, and you know, I hear Byard, who the team first guy, batted around for a couple of weeks on the discussion of whether or not he should and or should not have been offered or been asked to take the pay cut, whether or not he should have taken it. And if he was asked to do it because, well, he's always been team first, right? I don't blame him for how the offseason went down whatsoever. I don't think he's coming off of a season where it warranted that. I do think they're going in a different direction on how they're spending their money. And this could be an effort to speed that process up a bit. But his contract also doesn't expire at the end of this season. So it's a very interesting circumstance specifically for him and the individual player. I think he's handled it extremely professional. I don't think that's any surprise. I also don't think it's just as simple when it comes to his description of or the reasoning for OTAs, you know, I've missed them in the past. He's also been there in the past, and taking reps away from younger guys is things that veterans enjoy doing because they enjoy keeping their job and improving their salary. So, I think he's just you're seeing Kevin Byard team first guy in these comments. Behind the scenes, though, there's no doubt that it was a slight, and it was a wake-up call of the business of the NFL, despite being the franchise guy on defense for a while and knowing that he's the face of the at least the local Titans, right? Mm-hmm. That's out the window whenever the money gets involved, and money always gets involved at some point in a career.
Always makes it messy. Jonathan Hutton is with us, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Is this year the last hurrah with Tannehill, Henry, and Kevin Byard?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I still have that vibe. I had that vibe during last season, though. Like, you know, just contractually, didn't really know what would happen with Tannehill and his contract situation because that was ballied about last offseason. They couldn't really maneuver it in order to make some moves happen, right? That was one of the factors as to why A.J. Brown was no longer there. But yeah, I still, based on the draft, they've drafted two day two quarterbacks the last 2 years. They've been planning for this. They've been open about the fact that they have talked with Ryan previous to the draft, prior to the start, the official quote-unquote start of the offseason. And they stayed in communication with him on the overall plan. Now, we don't know exactly how those conversations went, but it went well enough to where he's there and he's getting paid. And, you know, they're moving forward with yet another what he called deja vu, which is a backup will be a first-year guy. In Henry's case, while I don't think I see a slip in his game, I mean, I 1,500 yards behind that offensive line and a very predictable offense based on Warren Sharp's numbers and, you know, knowing that we watch this team on a down-to-down basis. First and second down was Henry's down because that's when he's actually in the football game. I do think at some point you have to consider a year early before a year late. Maybe they've already tried to do that and they've decided to do it a year late. Again, don't know. We don't know what happens this year. But he's still the bell cow. He's still what this offense is built around. And they have to have a plan for, you know, whenever he leaves, just like they do with Tannehill. And I right now I feel more certain that they feel like they have the guy in Will Levis that's the heir apparent more than whoever they have in the backfield behind Derrick Henry, because he's still producing at a high level whenever he's healthy. And by and large, he's healthy. I do agree, though, with the wear and tear. And eventually that comes back to really get you at that position. And at some point, you have to go younger in order to just help yourself out in terms of what you're spending at the position and what you need for other spots. But yeah, I still lean towards, I get the feeling this is the last hurrah, because this offseason, guys, don't you agree, Caroline? It's just like 1 foot in, 1 foot out on what they're doing. It's really hard to describe their overall vision for 2023, and I think they're trying to build for the future while trying to be competitive now. And that is also part of the division they're playing in. If they're in the AFC West, I mean, these guys probably aren't on the roster right now.
Yeah, it reminds me, well, last year reminded me, and you're right, it just felt like, you know, that whole season, it was just coming to an end for a lot of guys, those core guys on that team. Sort of felt like that 03 year, where, you know, it was like that last hurrah, you know, you make it to the playoffs,
era.
And then you try, you start to think, like, who can we keep? You know, guys that we let go, can we still hold this together? We tried to hold it together one more year. That 04 year was just a disaster with injuries. And it seems like this team is headed toward that direction where, you know, they've already, you know, dumped salaries with cutting veteran guys that have been injured. And now this season is that season where, okay, we're going to try to give it one more go with these core guys. But then after that, if we can't make a legitimate run, we got to part ways. And I think asking Beyer to take a pay cut, because I think they knew already, Hutt, that Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill next year more than likely wouldn't be on this team. But Kevin Beyer was sort of the wild card. If he takes a pay cut, would that possibly allow us to keep him an extra year after this season? But now that he didn't take pay cut, I don't see him here next season at all.
Yeah, I agree. Just based on how things have gone, I'm totally with you there. And look, I wasn't certain that Tannehill was going to be here this year. You know, Henry, yes. And again, that's just me reading between the lines on the initial comments made about both players. Carthon said he wanted to evaluate the quarterback position. And he was asked about Henry. He couldn't wait to get in front of him, size him up, and hear what everything was about, you know. And then the comments this offseason were, what are you hearing when you're out and about and you meet Titans fans? And you better not be trading Derrick Henry, mm-hmm. you know. And he's admitting that. Right. That's what fans are saying. I don't know if they went into the offseason truly knowing that Tannehill was their guy, that they wanted to see how things played out. And this is how things played out. They had the structure in place because he's under contract to do it this way, but they also had the maneuverability if they needed to make some space to do that. And this is the structure they came back with. So, you know, they found in their eyes a solution at left tackle that could be a rookie, that could be a vet. And they addressed the offensive line. They spent money and got Jeffrey Simmons done on the defensive front, and they've got that core. You know, that's the definition of this football team, is on the defensive line. It's hard to define the rest of the individual groups, and that's going to come with time as Carthon gets his hands across the entire roster. But to me, just the signal of Kevin Beyer take a pay cut, that to me is just a philosophy from management, new management, saying the money we're going to spend is going to be in different areas, not at the safety position. They'll spend money, but not top five, top ate money at the position. And it was also key here. They didn't ask him to take a contract extension and let's whittle this down. Let's give more money up front and let's get your contract down. It was just a straight pay cut. That's also an indication that it's not for long.
Hutt, I got two interesting questions to ask you, but I'll ask you on the other side of this break.
Okay. Following the rules, Derek Mason.
Set out the hook.
Because I, as you were talking, I was thinking about these two things. Like, man, what if this wouldn't have happened? Or what if, you know, this would have happened? Where would the Titans be? But I want to ask you those after on the other side.
D-Mace okay. dangling the carrot. Yeah. We'll get into that with Hutton on the other side. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace is brought to you by the News End Sportsbook with cash rewards and the easiest, simplest betting experience possible. Betting just got better. Download the Zen Sportsbook app today. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The NHL draft is in town tonight. Jonathan Hutton joins us now, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. D-Mace, you had a little philosophical question.
Yeah, and this is the what if. If the Titans, because we knew there's been, you know, speculations that the Titans were trying to move up to that third spot to get C.J. Yep. Stroud. Obviously, they were not able to. They end up taking Skronsky with their pick. Do you think at that point they were ready to move on with Ryan Tannehill as their quarterback for the future for the next 2 or 3 years? Because there was no, you know, you didn't know if Will Levis, there was no promise that Will Levis would be there in the second round. I've thought about this constantly. Like, when they drafted Peter, in their mind, did they think, okay, we can go another 2 or 3 years with Ryan Tannehill? And it just so happened that Will Levis fell to them in the second round.
So I say yes, just based on the fact that they would be, hypothetically, based on what Florio put out there right before the draft, they would be acquiring DeAndre Hopkins' contract. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know how else you make a move like that unless you're making a move at quarterback and you're drafting Stroud. Yes, to answer your question, yes. I think Stroud's the starter. I think Tannehill's somewhere else. And I think if the report was totally accurate and they're acquiring DeAndre Hopkins, they can restructure his deal, but they still have to acquire it and put it on the roster and on the books. And the easiest route to make money happen right now on the books, on the cap, and to lower it is with a designation for Tannehill's money. So, yeah, I think that would have been the indication. And I don't know why you trade up and you mortgage everything and then lose a year on the quarterback that you just moved up to get with a new offensive coordinator, new quarterback coach. To me, it doesn't make sense to go with the veteran ahead of him at that point, even though we've seen the franchise do it. I'd go ahead and start the clock, especially in this division with the young quarterbacks that are going to be paired together now moving forward. Yeah, I think the timing would have been perfect for that. Just like the timing for Will Levis, he's in a really good spot because I think hypothetically here, he can now use a year to learn. Stroud, to me, was coming into the league to start.
Yeah, now, when they drafted Peter, do you think that because, again, there was no promise that Will Levis would be there in the second round.
Right.
Do you think then after drafting Peter – in their minds, they're thinking, okay, we didn't get the quarterback that we wanted. We end up drafting a left tackle or guard, whatever you want to classify him as, of the future. But we're going to stick with Ryan Tannehill because we don't see, moving forward, a quarterback worthy of drafting other than Will Levis. But there's no promise that he's going to be there. But even with that, did you see them redoing Ryan Tannehill's contract because they didn't draft a quarterback?
No, I still saw it as a one-year thing, mm-hmm. But you do get to pivot and go to another transition, right? Mm-hmm. There were rumblings that the Titans were among those making calls to get back into the first round. Mm-hmm. Now, that's convenient after they draft Will Levis to throw in there, you know, and I'm not saying they did this, but like the nugget that they want, they were chasing him even then, but they couldn't find the trade partner to go get him. They did move up to draft him in the second round. So all of that tracks. So I think as he started to fall, they start playing that game. But yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that you pass on the quarterback at 11 for any other position if you think he's the quarterback of the future. So I think it's just how the draft fell versus the value of knowing that they could keep both guys and the insurance of knowing, hey, if we have to start the clock earlier than we want to on Levis, it's worth the investment to go ahead and do this now based on the transition of power at general manager, new offensive coordinator who's signing off on it, one that, you know, Vrabel certainly wanted to at least talk with whenever they elevated Downing. And then they bring in Charles London, who also interviewed for the OC job here, too. I think the timing would have been right either way. And I think it's worked out in their favor, regardless of how much money Tannehill's making. It's worked out in their favor to have the luxury of going with the veteran that knows this offense, that's also having to learn the new quarterback and new corner coordinator things, too. Plus bring in Levis, who, you know, certainly needs time based on observations made at minicamp, but still a lot more to come.
Jonathan Hutton with us. Jonathan, a hypothetical for you. Are we making a mistake maybe by assuming that by the time the season starts, Will Levis will be the backup and Malik Willis will be third string or out of the picture entirely? Because let me throw this at you. I know there's been a little bit of certain, there's been articles written, there's been some feedback, real supportive from the teammates, the coaching staff, for what Malik Willis has done during this offseason, which I tend to take with a grain of salt because it's the offseason. We have to see. But it's better than the opposite, right? Say Malik Willis hasn't shown up to practice. You know, Malik Willis is really struggling. That's not good at all. But there is an advantage that Malik Willis has, right? We have this impression of him as a guy that struggled mightily, right? Thrown into the deep water with the Sharks and got eaten up for the most part. Or got wounded, he's still alive, right?
He didn't throw in, Willie. He ran in.
He's got some scars.
Yeah, Willie, he's still here with us.
He's still with us, though.
He's still on the team.
He got out alive, right? But it was –
No throwing, though. No throwing, though. He ran in. He didn't throw in.
Yeah. But, you know, he's probably sitting there saying, you know what? I've been through that deep water. You know, I've been swimming with the Sharks. This guy hasn't done it yet, so I have an advantage going into this camp. I mean, it seems like that Instagram post, that's a little bit of where he's coming from here. Yeah. I can remember this. When I was playing basketball at Vanderbilt, I had an advantage over the freshman when I was a junior, right? I outplayed the freshman. And I should have outplayed the freshman. I knew all the plays. I'd been through all these practices for a couple years. There's an advantage, at least at the start. Now, whether Will Levis will catch up faster, that's the one thing. So what's your theory on what we're going to see from Malik Willis? Are you buying into some of these positive vibes we're getting?
I'm not yet, no. I'm like you. I'm holding.
Well, I didn't really pan out as a player either, so yeah, that's what you probably would have said in 1992.
Yeah, but you played multiple sports, and you've got the skins on the wall.
Wait till baseball season. Willie will do better when the baseball starts.
Skins on the wall. Look, if Will Levis is not the backup of this football team, my goodness, because they didn't want.
But what if it's because Willis has done so much better? I guess I'm not trying to predict gloom and doom on Levis.
7 months ago, we are 7 months removed from them bringing in Josh Dobbs off the trash heap and starting him 4 days later in an NFL game where it was meaningful because they wanted to make the postseason. Now, did they win? No. But did they look like they were a more functional offense that, you know, gave some options to Todd Downing? Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to unthink that. Like, we've all seen that. It's hard to unknow that. We know that happened.
They went from, like, 16 pass attempts to 30 within a matter of 2 game days when they brought in Dobbs with practically nothing to practice on. So that to me, in and of itself, tells me that Will Levis is the backup. And look, I mean, right now, the way the new rules are set up for the emergency quarterback, I don't know how many teams will use that in week one. Like, will you have three guys on your roster? Because you have to have your guy on your roster to be the emergency guy. But I do think down the line, we could see all three guys active, hypothetically. Just because of the rules in favor of how teams could use that. But again, like, I, I'm basing this solely off of what we saw last year, and I don't – I mean, maybe I'm stupid here. I don't think the guys developed all that much over the course of 7 months and a couple of OTA and minicamp practices. Let's see him run the offense in the preseason. Levis is going to get a ton of reps too. And ultimately, based on where they've drafted him and how they and where they drafted Malik Willis and then how we saw them use him last year or not use him, to me, they're moving forward with Will Levis as the number two, if not the number one at some point this season based on the record. Again, I think everything's on the table. I just don't think it includes Malik Willis.
It is overreaction to shorts and no pad season.
Yeah.
Every single
every year we do this. Yeah. Every year.
However, last year Malik Willis did not look good in shorts and t-shirts. Like he was running, he was feeling pressure in the pocket when he can't even be. You know, no one is having any contact. So I mean, and I didn't attend based on the timing of the practices. I didn't see it with my own eyes. I'm trusting those that agreed with everyone last year that he looks better now. But give Levis time in this offense, and he should be light years better in the preseason than what we saw from Willis a year ago, where the guy wouldn't run and Vrabel took him out of a preseason game. Or wouldn't pass. He would run instead of pass, and Vrabel removed him from the preseason game.
Hutton, you are the best. We appreciate you as always. We'll chat with you next Wednesday.
Yeah, but I love the buzz in town with the draft. Everything's great, and I love the Trotz era so far. So hopefully we get some great news with the draft, Willie, and guys, based on the first draft of this new regime.
It really does feel like such a fun day today downtown.
Yep.
Such
cool.
A fun day
yeah,
at
it's cool.
Arena.
And get this, Al Hutt, I don't know, you might remember these players, but there are actually two players who are former Preds whose sons could be picked late in the first round, right around when the Predators have those picks. Like they have 15 and 24. So Yannick Perreault's son. I can remember their dads
nice.
Like it was yesterday, and I am feeling old that they have boys old enough to get drafted now. This is crazy.
It's yet another full circle moment for this organization.
You know you're on your second generation of hockey fans when, right? Guys' sons are getting drafted.
Yeah.
Hutton, you're the best. We'll chat with you next week. And coming up next, we will get into more NHL draft talk because all the NHL draft gurus are in town. But we have our own NHL draft gurus on this program. There are four players that have been slated to the Predators in NHL mock drafts. What do Willie and Nick think of those players? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from Jack Daniel's Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The NHL draft kicks off tonight in Nashville, but hey, there's also Sounds Baseball tonight. So you can tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 7.05 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds, AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals, who are not playing very well. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure.
If you need to go into therapy with me, Mets are also struggling. The underachieving teams of the National League, that's Cardinals and Mets in the same club.
Yeah,
so.
The Willie and Caroline baseball support system.
Baseball
over
misery club.
We are here for all of you miserable baseball fans out there. But I do not consider myself an NHL draft guru by any extent of the imagination. However, Nick Kieser and Willie Donick, I would say, are our draft gurus of the program.
They are the expertise.
At least we pretend to be. We're going to act like
Well, y'all pretending really damn good.
But I have to say, I have not been touring the world to watch the 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds play. I have not seen these guys play firsthand.
Haven't been to Sweden?
It's kind of like crashing the study hall and just saying, can I see your notes, guys? Like, you get the notes of the people that have seen it, and you start scribbling down the notes. Can I copy your notes?
You haven't seen that 13-year-old in Finland? You hadn't seen him?
I haven't seen
him. Man, they're talking about him everywhere.
Willie's flight to
in
Russia
Finland.
Got canceled.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I looked at four NHL mock drafts, and these four players are not the only four players that are going to be available to the Predators in their two picks tonight. But I want to get Willie and Nick's thoughts on these four players that have been slated to the Nashville Predators in recent NHL mock drafts. First one in the Athletics NHL mock draft. Winger Gabe Perreault. Reporter Nick, what's your breakdown?
Okay, so Gabe Perreault. I do like Gabe Perreault, but he's not a centerman. Okay, so that's something that we have to consider here when we are wanting to make these selections. I think he's very appealing based on the merit of he has all of the talent that you would require of a winger. And the thing for me is Barry Trotz, if he does go this way, he needs to add some size. He's not 200 pounds. He's right at under 6 foot, but that's okay. He can pack a punch at some point. And what I really like about Gabe Perreault, he's a clever guy. So when I've looked at some things from him and like, I mean, I'm no prospect savant either, but I have looked at a lot of them, but more or less in the last couple of weeks. But what I like about him is he's a good playmaker and he can shoot in stride, which is what the Predators need more of. You know, not to compare him to Ryan Johansson, but Johansson liked to pass a lot. Gabe is going to be a healthy mix of both of those things. So that's what I like out of him. He's in Scott Wheeler's third tier of prospects that I keep looking back at, and he's really, really good. And he played with the United States National Development Team. And when I thought about, okay, if the Preds needed a weapon, if he's there, if they want someone to come in here in a couple of years, that would be a great selection for them. Now, he has a lot of teammates that might go before him, and he could be the fourth one that goes. But I like him because he's developed around like a Yannick Perreault, and he's been able to work with guys that are they're very talented just like him. And so one other cool stat about him is that he is the development program's single-season points record holder. So he's done better than Austin Matthews and Jack Hughes. But then again, it's playing at the same level as some of the same kids. And so he does have the talent. He is going to be capable of being a good threat in the NHL. It's just a matter of, do the Preds think a winger needs to be taken above a center first? I'm not sure what their priority is. If you ask me, if the weapon's there, take him. But personally, if you can find that in your centerman, that would be great too.
He gave a very thorough scouting report.
That was a very thorough report.
Perreault is one of the guys I reference who is his dad played for the Predators briefly. Yannick Perreault, very good player. He played with the guy we're going to have on here in a little bit, David Legwan, who's in the bullpen right now warming up. But you know, about the winger part, I do think there's probably some people sitting there going, they need to take a center, and they need to take a D.
Right.
And if they take a winger, you'd be like, oh, why did they take a winger? They got a lot of wingers.
Got plenty
of those. They have Tomasino. They got Evangelista. They have Kemmel. Mm-hmm. That is all true. But remember, numbers, right? You do need, on every lineup, you need more
Twice
wingers.
Twice as many wingers.
Yeah, you need eight wingers every night. You know, so keep that in mind. You need more wingers in the system. So, it's probably equal. You probably take the position of need. But I think, again, remember, these guys are 2, 3, 4, 5 years away. So you want the best. If you really feel strongly about Perreault, for example, if that's who they like, then I think you have to take it regardless of the position. There, one thing I note, there are a few less defensemen projected to go in the first round than there are. There's more wingers projected in the first round than there are centers and D. But there are a lot of centers, but we know this. They're going to go early.
One, two, three, four, five.
A lot of people do think that the first five guys will be centers. So now there'll be more wings available when you get to 15.
I think, too, just to piggyback off of what Willie said about the defenders, there's a lot of first-round talented defensemen, but because there are so many damn forwards, they're all going to go in the first round. So you're not going to see a lot of the defensemen go early. That's just based on position and attractiveness to what these guys can bring. Now, one defender I like, and I know, Caroline, you may have one in specific that you want to ask about, so I'll go ahead and go into Mikhail Googliev, I think is how you say his last name. Just might as well call him Googly Eyes or something. I don't know how to say his last name.
I don't think he's related to Julia Guglia. Remember from The Wedding Singer?
Probably not. He was born in 2005. So.
There might be, you know, NHL gurus out there that are driving around listening to our show. Like, did they just call him Michael Googly Eyes? Like, these Nashville folk talking
these
about
guys
hockey.
Don't know hockey.
They don't know what they're talking about.
Somebody driving around with Chris Mason from Red Deer, Alberta, going, what are these guys talking about? Mace, you told me they know hockey here.
Now, I do like, all right, so on a serious note, one defenseman I would take a look at. I'll give you two Swedes. I would give you Tom Willander as one, and obviously the Preds, they lost Mattias Ekholm to the they lost him to the Oilers. So when you're thinking about a right-handed shot, too, because you don't have a lot of talented right-handed shots coming in the draft very often, he's appealing to me. He obviously played with the big men over there in Sweden. And for me, when you're playing with men already at a young age, that's pretty telling. So I really, really like that from his sake. And he did score over 30 points, which is really unique. And then another guy, too, that I pointed out to Jared yesterday on his program was Axel Sandin Pelikka. Also another right-handed shot from Sweden.
That's
yeah.
A good one.
That is an awesome name. I love that. He needs to be in like a movie or something. But he's also an 05. He needs to add some size to him. He also played with some grown men. And what I like from him is it says from what I've read about him that he has sneaky strength. So that tells me he might just be a strong guy that can skate really well. Because as a former defenseman myself, you have to be a really good skater to keep up with a guy like Bedard or Fantilli at some point. So you want to make sure that these guys are strong in stature and can keep up with them. But one thing that I always remind myself when I played was you want the guys to come to you, but then you also need to have the capabilities to keep up with them, trying to chase them too. Hopefully you're not going to be chasing them as much. But I think when I'm thinking of a prospect to draft, I'm thinking of defensemen like that, that can be strong, that can be good on the puck. And I think Axel Sandin fits that. I think he fits that mold really, really well. So,
one thing to keep in mind on the defenseman, will there be a run on defensemen between the time that we think the four or five centers will go right off the board at the beginning and then right in that 8, 9, 10, 11, leading up to the Predators at 15? Do a lot of teams – Willander, I see a lot in that 10, 11, 12 range. I'm not sure he'll get there, but there are other defensemen that are right in the – right that will be there at 15 unless there's a big run. So there's an example of where you could flip a second-round pick or something to move up a couple of notches if there's a guy that you really like among that group that that Nick said. For example, if you were just searching for a D, if there's three or four you like and there's one you really want – and you're not sure he's going to get to 15, but you get it at 11 or 12, that's something to keep in mind.
One question for our hockey friends on the program before we get to David Legwon coming up next. How much does right shot, left shot really matter? And
it
how
actually,
much of it just is? Just get your best players out there on the ice. Get your best demon out there on the ice.
Different guys can play different ways. So, for some people, they cannot play the other side very well. Some guys are versatile enough that they can do it. A lot of coaches would like it if it works well where you have a left shot and a right shot playing together. That's the ideal situation, but there are guys that it's pretty easy to do. Some guys kind of struggle. Like, for example, last year when they moved Roman Josi over to his opposite side and put him with Ryan McDonagh, it clicked, even though you had two. Sometimes I forget in my mind which guys are righty and which guys are left. They're both lefties. But I asked Ryan McDonagh, I was like, what's it like to play with Roman Josi? He skates all over the place anyway. He's going to end up over there at some point. Just let him go. I'll just do my thing. He'd go around. I'll find him.
And that's just two good defensemen, regardless of if it's right shot or left shot. Coming up next, the very first Predator drafted to the Nashville Predators organization, David Legwon will join us. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live out here at Jack Daniel's Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. NHL draft in action tonight in Nashville. And there's no better person to join us than the Nashville Predators' first ever draft pick, David Legwon. Appreciate you for joining us. And the beginning of your career, the infancy of your career aligns with the beginning and the infancy of this organization. Now you see the very first ever head coach is now the next general manager. Andrew Burnett, a former Predator, is now the next head coach. It seems like we're entering this new era of Nashville Predators hockey. What has it been like from your perspective to watch this organization grow over time?
It's good. It's obviously with Barry coming back and David still being here, it's the pillars of the foundation that kind of started this thing. So I was with Bruno my first year too, and he's my line mate, so it's good to see him come back and coach and get into it and those types of things. But David's obviously laid something down for Barry to pick up and take off running here. And, you know, obviously it's hard to be good every year and be in that upper echelon every year with the salary cap and having the right draft picks and the inventory and stuff. So they got that now, and now it's time to build.
So it's interesting. It was 25 years ago on Tuesday, I think, was the actual anniversary. Monday was the expansion draft, and then Tuesday was the draft. And so George Plaster and I were on the other side of the concourse. We were doing the draft, and you talk about two clueless guys that didn't know. You think you guys don't know about some of these prospects. We didn't know the regular players, other than the top guys in the league. You know, so
I don't know if Willie knew what icing was.
No, I was struggling. I had a crash course going on. But Leggy, you remember those days? I mean, that was really something. We all had to learn a lot about that. We had Cliff Ronning on early in the show, and he was commenting that when you looked up in the stands, they had those hockey 101 things where you could put the headset on and get the lowdown on icing and offsides and things like that. Do you remember those days?
It's crazy how far it's come, and you know, obviously the Cup Finals in 17, and then you know, getting things like the draft. It was 20 years ago the draft was here too. It was 2003 as the draft was here, and obviously, you want to look back at that draft, but if they could do something like that in this draft, that's a hell of a draft. If the, you know, the Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, Kevin Klein, like those are their first three picks that year. That's a healthy start to a good long playoff run and stability in the franchise. So
did Trotsky give you a plaque or anything for the 25th anniversary of being the first pick? Nothing?
No, I didn't, but it was fun. We had a luncheon the other day, and Craig Leopold actually came. So it was
good. Did he really?
It was good to see Craig, and he's doing well. And you know, obviously without him, there's no hockey in Nashville ever. So I know people boo him and get mad at him, but at the end of the day, he did bring hockey here and kept it here. And obviously the 2005, 6, 7 year was obviously there's a lot of turmoil and questions.
And some really good teams.
Yeah.
Man, you guys
were good. Those are good teams, fun teams, good guys, seeing all the old faces. And it's always good to come back.
Now, how were those years for you, those turmoil years, whether the team's going to be here, it's not going to be here? How was that for you and for your teammates?
It was hard. I mean, obviously, you're worried about, okay, am I living in Hamilton, Ontario, or am I living in Nashville, Tennessee, or – you know,
comparable cities.
Yeah. No, but anyway, like we had those ticket drives here and all that stuff going on. And it was, you know, guys were coming in to make sure that we could play here and keep the team here and the fan support picked up behind it. And then, you know, those were good hockey teams, you know, getting 110 points a year, winning 50 games and doing those types of things. So it was an exciting time. It was different. Obviously you never want to see a franchise relocate or move and those types of things. And I think the league and the city of Nashville are all in a good place now.
I thought, honestly, you tell me what you remember from those days, though. As you mentioned, they had to strip the team down. You guys had a powerhouse team, but they had to get the payroll down, make some trades of veteran players. I thought for you guys to make the playoffs the next year was, if that didn't happen, I do wonder if the ticket drive would have been as successful. But you guys made the playoffs, had a real scrappy team. In fact, Radek Bonk, his son, could get picked tonight.
He's a hell of a player. He plays in London, obviously, the little rivalry with Sarnia.
Yeah, so we'll get to what you're doing these days. So he watches these guys a lot. But what do you remember that 07-08 team, that was pretty special because none of you guys exactly knew what was going to happen in the future, but you really rallied together.
You know, the one team that was 0-4 when we first made the playoffs, you know, our payroll was $18 or $19 million, and we played the Detroit Red Wings, it was $82 million. Mr. Illich would just go buy whoever he wanted and do whatever he wanted. But we went in there and gave him a good series in 0-4, and then it kind of picked up after that in 0-5. Well, obviously, we missed 0-4, 0-5, but then, you know, 5-6 and 6-7, and those teams were good and ran into San Jose, which was tough.
So you were a first-round draft pick. You've been there. You've been through the excitement and the nerves and the scariness of, I don't know where I'm going to be living. I don't know where I'm going to be playing my career. What was your night of draft night like?
It was interesting because Nashville was actually picking third, so I didn't really know. But David moved up and went up to two. So we were in Buffalo, New York, another great city. exciting times. I love Buffalo too. I played there, but it was interesting in 1998 in Buffalo, New York. So it's definitely not like this is with the draft stuff and the coverage and all that stuff. It was way more low key, and you know, there wasn't the internet and all this other. There was internet, but not like phones and all this other.
Yeah, the
stuff.
Event has gotten a lot bigger.
Yes,
in general.
It's an event. It's a whole week of events now. I mean, there's things every day leading up to it. It used to just be one day, and now it's 2 days, which I think is good. They turned it in, and it's in the middle of the week, which is good also. So they've done a great job promoting it and making it is what it is today.
Do you like where this sport is headed in hockey? Because every sport has sort of that pivotal point in its career where, you know, they sort of transition out of the old ways into the new ways to try to, you know, try to incorporate more fans. Do you like the way hockey is headed? We just announced that, you know, TSU, which is a historically black college, they will be the first team to have a collegiate hockey team. And thanks to what the Predators have been doing. But do you enjoy to see where the hockey is going these days?
I do. I think it's exciting for everybody. I think the league, the teams, the franchises are in the right place. And, you know, a friend of mine just bought the Ottawa Senators for $1 billion, and that's...
You got friends of $1 billion. We need to talk to these guys.
He's another owner in the OHL, so he owns an OHL team, too. Michael owns an OHL team, too, so I know him through that, but... it's things like that in Nashville. You know, you look at 1998 or 97 when Craig purchased this franchise, you know, everything's going up and moving in the right directions. But I look at the fans and the fan support, and like Derek just said, the kids playing hockey now around, you know, the Ford Ice Center is up now. There used to be a game down in Cool Springs and Centennial, and that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. You didn't have other rinks in the area. There was two rinks, and if you couldn't, you know, and it's an expensive sport to play for kids. Mm-hmm. It is expensive. I mean, it's getting worse in my mind. I mean, the sticks are $200, skates are $800. It's not like you can just go pick up a ball and play hockey. It's, you know, you got to skate, and you know, it's great to see the strides the game has taken and the strides it's going, and it's only going to go forward, I think.
Tell people what you're doing now, because you've referenced it a couple times, but you're watching a lot of these kids that we're going to see tonight, the kids on the Canadian junior circuit. You're watching them a lot. You're in an ownership group in Sarnia, and so they're in this league. What do you look for in some of these players? How do you try to process who's going to make it and who's going to be the type of guy that can play well in this league?
Well, I don't think you can process it because in the Ontario Hockey League, we draft kids when they're 15, turning 16.
I can't imagine how hard that is. That's got to be tough, too.
These kids are turning, you know, Connor Bedard's 17 years old. He's going to be 18 in a month. I mean, yeah, he's a phenomenal talent, and it's going to be a change for him to go play against. He's going to play against men. You know, there's no more kids. So, but our team in Sarnia, we have, you know, you referenced Yannick, and I played with Yannick. And we had Jacob Perreault in Sarnia. And we drafted Gabe in Sarnia, so I'm hoping he goes to a good spot that will maybe put him in Sarnia instead of Boston College.
You wouldn't mind having him for a year or so. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having him for a year or two. But that's kind of how it works with us. You know, there's the high-end American kids that probably aren't coming, but you got to draft them anyways. Our draft's very similar. We have 15 rounds. It's actually saying our draft was in May. So it's funny, I actually drafted a kid that used to live down the street from me in Nashville. In Legends Ridge, and I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even know that. So it's kind of a cool thing.
There's some guys coming up through the ranks here.
Yes,
like, you
got
to scout. Get your scouts down here more.
Well, we drafted them. They're coming to play for us.
You knew what was going on.
Yeah.
What was the hardest thing for you? You went basically from the junior league in the OHL up to the NHL. You didn't have a whole lot of time I mean, I don't remember. Did you ever play for Milwaukee? I don't think you played any AHL, right?
I didn't.
You had a bit of a crash course. You went back to junior for a year,
yes,
and then came in, and it was off and running.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard. You're a young kid. It's the adjustments of, you know, Derek went to college. It's probably an adjustment like that. You got to learn how to cook your food. You got to learn how to do your laundry. You got to learn how to do this. You got to learn how to take yourself to dinner and those types of things. So it's kind of interesting. And we had a little bit of an older team my first year, so I was 18 and everyone else is 24, 25, where it's like, hey, we're going to go get something to eat. And I'm like, oh, I probably can't go there.
Do they card there?
Yeah. So it's in a little bit of an adjustment, but it's fun.
Wanted to get your thoughts on some of the prospects in this year's draft. We were talking at the break about the Russian. And Willie said, well, there's plenty of Russians. We're like, no. The Russian. Matvei Mishkov.
Yeah, who's taking Mishkov?
I have no idea, but he's a phenomenal talent. And, you know, obviously with everything politically-wise going on over there, which is not really any of our business, but he's a hell of a hockey player, and he's going to come to the league. He's going to produce. He's going to score. He's electric. I think there's, you know, Connor's obviously an elite, exceptional talent and is going to come in and produce and be in Chicago. And obviously what they did yesterday, bringing to put around him and help him out is going to help him huge.
Let's just say that there were none of the political things that you're referencing. If he were playing, like maybe say Radulov was playing over here, do you think he would be hands down in the top two or three? Mishkov, is he that good, or are these other guys that we need to be that good?
I think there's three or four of them that are that good, and you know, obviously to come in and be a complete game changer when you're 18, 19 years old is very hard. Obviously, there's, you know, Connor McDavid in Edmonton's. I don't think we're ever going to see another player like that in my lifetime. I'm probably not. He's that good, and you know, this Connor's a little different type of player than Connor McDavid. So it's good to see the young kids though. Coming up and pushing the envelope every year, getting better, and pushing. You referenced Tomasino and
Evangelista.
And these guys. They're pushing the envelope to make guys that are playing here all the time a little uncomfortable and pushing for more ice and more a bigger role and those types of things.
David Legwan, former Predator, appreciate you for joining us. Enjoy the draft tonight. Should be a blast. Awesome. Appreciate you. Coming up next, we will continue to get back into some of the players that have been mocked to the Nashville Predators tonight, plus the reporter's breakdown of these prospects. All that coming up next on Caroline Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.